And I want an owner to learn how to lead and ask questions and guide. And that, as opposed to telling somebody to do something where there's no thought around it, it's just a soldier then acting upon an order. You know, so my whole philosophy hinges in that world. I want an owner to come out on the other side, not needing me anymore.
It's podcast o'clock. How do you like that one?
How long have you been waiting to use that?
I've actually never used that one before, but you know, I live on a campground, and so often as I'm doing my morning walks, I'm seeing people. Everybody has it's 5 o'clock somewhere, you know, signs in their yard.
Got it.
Because they're all retirees, and for me, I'm like, it's podcast o'clock. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Shop Talk podcast brought to you by 124Go. I'm your co-host, Chris Soulamé. And as usual, sitting across the Zoom, that's our new norm, with my great friend, Mr.
John Palmieri.
And man, I cannot believe how excited I just got to have this conversation. I knew we had an uber cool dude joining us today. You never know who you're going to meet in this industry. You know, there's so many people out there that have gotten famous, right? I like to call it. And then there are people that are really doing the work that you may have just never crossed paths with. And I feel like the gentleman joining us, Mr. Steve Gomez, is one of those guys. So first of all, welcome, Steve. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and happy new year to both of you and everybody listening. Thank God we're in 2021.
Amen to that.
This is right.
Yeah, I know it already feels fresher. And if you're, I don't know when you're listening to this, but I think we sit on day 4 of January the 4th today as we record this. And so it's bright and sunny where I'm at in Florida, and it's a good outlook for the year. That's for sure. Stuff's getting done. For those of you who haven't heard of Steven yet, because he's got a lot that he's done, and he's got a lot that he's doing, which I love. To give a few of the notables, you probably started out your coaching years at Salon Training International, which
STI,
STI, which is the first consulting company that I knew of in the salon industry. And so you've been doing it that far back. That was before internet, well, almost before internet. I think
exactly.
My consultant there taught me to send an email, but you've done work for Milady. And then you had your own marketing company, which I think is really interesting and an important piece for salons, Paradigm Promotions. You now still actively write for Lanza, EMK. You have a partnership with Bassett, which is a distributorship where you do business education for them out on the West Coast. You grew up in the business of both hair salons and pizzerias. How's that for like a ton of fun, right? After the salon, you go, I'm wondering if you, I might even ask you if you got free pizza delivered to the salon. Yeah. And so I know today you and your wife help salon owners through your business coaching group, and you help them with operations, leadership, financial fitness. You've written a couple of books, one called Financial Fitness and the other Interdependent, which is awesome. Creating a Culture of Growth. Steven just brings a wealth of knowledge to this conversation. I know another guy across the screen that has some knowledge too. Mr. Palmieri, how do we want to take this out?
Well, let's start with my favorite place, which is I always want to know how people got into the industry, because the actually interesting part, one of the things I know about Steven is Steven's not, you know, licensed hairdresser, yet you're still knee deep as more than anybody I can think of in our industry. So let's start with that journey. How did you get into the beauty industry?
I grew up in and around it. My family was in the industry as well as the restaurant business. I went to school for restaurant management and marketing, went over and worked on that side of the coin out of school, got burned out on 90-hour weeks.
Right.
I came back over to our side of the coin was helping run the business. And then I launched my own marketing company. That took me all over the US over an 8-year stretch. I've been to every state but two. I've got Vermont and Alaska left to get to, and I'll figure that out.
Sure.
And I loved what I did, but I never got past algebra in high school and never thought I'd be smart enough to understand it, avoided the numbers. My idea of profit was the bills are paid, money's coming in, we got full books tomorrow, let's go shopping. I lived in a high rise on the 46th floor in downtown Chicago, had the nice car, the steak dinners, dressed really sharp. I was having a blast.
Right.
I got audited. And they looked at, you know, what we were famous for doing in our industry, we keep the cash,
right?
You know, so they looked at 1 year and they saw the difference between the bank statements and sales receipts. And they went back on me 5 years and I owed them $80,000 I didn't have.
Right.
And that drove me to bankruptcy and I got a divorce and, lost everything. I was couch surfing between my mom and my brother's house. Didn't want to give up on things. So I kept working it. A salon that I was doing some marketing for out in Omaha introduced me to his coach, a lady by the name of Julie Shepherdley. And Julie arranged for me to give her a ride to the airport. And that 20-minute ride, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for that defining moment. She invited me to be an exhibitor at the first YBN retreat in San Diego. So I go to this event, I go home. The bank of mom, we've all hit that right. bank up in some iteration in our life. And I got myself the cash flow to get to this event. Because back in those days, if you wanted to build your business, there wasn't social media. So literally I'd go in to a town, I'd get the yellow pages and I'd go for beauty and I'd find the shops and, you know, what was the common street that had the most salons. And I'd walk in and share my concept, kind of like a sales consultant does with their products.
Sure.
But to go to this event and have about 200 salon owners from all over the country there, for me, it was huge for my business at the time. And it was, I got a bunch of new business out of it, but it was the message from the stage that was transformative for me. Kind of like Chris, you have vivid memories of her, of Susie and that company.
And Julie Shepherdley, so, by the way.
Yeah, so, yep. You know, I hired them to coach me and started working on me and started turning everything around for myself. And that journey was so transformative that when they offered me a chance to join the company and I was able to pay off all the debts, rebuild the credit, you know, rebuild everything for myself through what I learned. And that was so transformative that when they offered me a chance to join them, literally they gave me 2 weeks. They said, you know, if you want this, you got to move out here now. So I put everything in storage for my brother to sell off and I packed up my Jeep Grand Cherokee and off to Carlsbad I went. And I thought I was just going to show up and immediately be a coach and trainer.
Sure.
And, you know, that was an 18-month journey of me almost quitting twice and being let go a few times and having to really learn. And I'm thankful for that journey because their commitment was that you don't get in front of a room and facilitate and you don't get on a phone and coach unless you're walking that walk in your life. And until your shit's together, you're not going to be responsible when somebody is putting their business and their livelihoods in your hands.
Right.
You know, and I was, you know, it was a tough road to go down, but I'm thankful I did. I had a lot to learn. It was very humbling. I learned that I had selective discipline and yeah. that I did certain things that came naturally really well. And I avoided the things that I thought I was not smart enough to get. So through learning how to be a coach, I learned how to overcome all of that. And, you know, I haven't looked back since. I've coached over 475 salons of all different shapes and sizes from then to now. And if you'd have told me I would have literally traveled our world training in our industry, I would have told you you were nuts. But, you know, that's what we do. Before COVID, I did 39 out of 52 weekends in 2019. You know, so we're just on the road, hot and heavy, out there training and bringing a message.
Let me ask you this. You know, you had started off this journey where you had, you know, gone through this challenging time with the closing of your business, going out to California, yet you got involved in the coaching end of the beauty business. Why that?
You know, John, two things. One, the coaching I got was so transformative for me. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm a guy that never got past algebra, thought I was not smart enough to understand it, had a very similar experience to Christopher, where you, Chris, you know, were being taught how to do that first email. You know, they slid the computer across to me and said, touch it. plastic. It doesn't bite, dude. You know, so I went through something very similar, and I was living into the thoughts that I told myself, creating a reality that wasn't real. You know, so for me to go from, you know, thinking I wasn't smart enough to actually creating cash flow projections for my company and managing budget and doing all these things and becoming more confident in who I was and the personal growth that came along with the structural growth at the same time was so transformative for me that to me, I saw a life path, not even a career for me. It's my life path. So, you know, when they offered me that chance, I didn't even hesitate. You know,
what year was that, Steve? What year was it that you started coaching salons?
2002.
So let me ask you this question. So in 2002, you start coaching salons. If you had to pick one, two, maybe three of the challenges in 2002 that existed for salon owners, what were those one, two, or three, the biggest challenges at that time?
I'm going to say that they're pretty much very similar to what exists today without COVID. Sure. It's an owner being able to spend more time running the business and being reflective and thoughtful about what's happening as opposed to being reactionary and just putting fires out, number one.
Right.
That's timeless. Mm-hmm. Two, also timeless, going through the journey I did to understand and learn to love the numbers and the data and what it shares.
Yeah.
And then three, getting over the ego and realizing that the more people that are involved in where we're going, the more we increase the chance of getting there. Mm-hmm. You know, and none of that stuff has changed.
Why hasn't
it changed? Because, you know, I think it's human nature. I think, you know, when we're dealing with right brain creative soul, mm-hmm. you know, that right brain thinker is so creative and artistic and expressive and in the now.
Right.
It's not their natural inclination to be linear and structured and planned and organized. They usually rail against that. And, you know, in our industry, if you're going to be successful, you have to hustle. Yeah. You know, you have to come out of school, you got to grind, and you got 4 or 5 years to really build solidity and have a solid foundation. So I think people learn how to hustle to build a book, and that's all they really know, yeah. you know, and then they work in a business and they have their opinions about how this owner is running it or not. And, oh, I can do better. And it's or it was always my dream. So they, you know, they take loans out and they make a business look as beautiful as they can, but then they don't spend enough time working on the foundational and systematic things that are going to help the business grow mm-hmm. in a way that has the right foundation. And, you know, that's sure. why there's guys like you, John, guys like me that do what we do as coaches is mm-hmm. really to support people to put those right things in place.
Let's pretend I'm opening a hair salon, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to open it tomorrow. If I was going to go in order, right, here are the 3, 4, 5 things that you need to do first as you're going down this plan. You've got this moment, right? You're excited. You got this plan of you want to open a salon. What would be the first, second, third, you know, what are those things I need to do in order to be a successful salon owner?
Well, I think the first few things you have to do is make sure that your own financial life is in order. Mm-hmm. If you have the cash flow that you've saved up, and you're intent on using that, excellent. But a lot of times you're going to go take a loan out. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go take a loan out without COVID going on, an SBA loan is insane to qualify for. I mean, they make you jump through hoops. So mm-hmm. I think being prepared to understand what can I qualify for? Yeah. And if I can't get enough because of where my credit is right now, then what are the other resources if I really want this bad enough? Taking personal loans out from people that I respect that might have a liquidity to help me. Mm-hmm. I think looking at what's my current financial state and what's that process even going to be like in order for me to have the money to open a business, number mm-hmm. one. Number two, who do I know in the industry that runs a successful salon that I respect, that I can reach out to and get some mentorship from, that I can ask about pitfalls? I can ask about how they did it. What should I expect? What do I not know, you know, enough of? I think the next step would be, who can I learn from? Mm-hmm. You know, there's coaches like myself or Nikki Tobridge or other people that are out there in the industry, mm-hmm. You know, the Neils of the world that I believe anybody looking to open a business should be reaching out and looking to find our group of people
right.
so that we can then walk you through, okay, well, here's step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
And you thought of 1 and 2, but you didn't even think about 3, 4, or 5. I think those are the things, really finding the mentors,
mm-hmm.
getting the people that have been there, done that,
mm-hmm.
Being ready to invest in them, and understanding where you're at financially, and are you going to be able to get the type of money that you need to go do it?
So Steve, you know, help me through this mindset. And the mindset I have right now is, well, Steve, I've been a successful stylist for 7 years now, 5 years, 7, 8 years. I'm doing mm-hmm. really well. I got money in my pocket. I got a new car. I'm doing good. And you know what? The person I work for right now, I don't think they are any smarter than I am. In fact, I know I can do a better job. You know, tell me, convince me that I actually need coaching or I need a mentor, because in my mind right now, I think I know what I need to know. And I Perfect. Definitely think I'm better than my current owner.
Awesome. So if you're successful and you're 7 years in and you got a busy business, you know, you obviously are a catalyst. You obviously have the drive. There's a hunger there. And you're willing to take a risk. All those are great things. You have to look at what you don't know, because you're only looking at it right now conceptually. Mm-hmm. And so even if you think you can do things better than your owner, you have to ask yourself, where are you going to have to spend your time different from where you're spending it now once you become that business owner? Mm-hmm. That question in and of itself brings up a myriad of things, because if Larry, I'm going to have to spend my time probably talking to the sales consultants and doing inventory and, you know, closing out the books and the banks and paying the bills and looking at the numbers. Okay, so if you're going to have to do all those things, when are you going to do it? And of all those things, rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 meaning suck at it, don't like it, never done it. 5, I think I kind of know. 10, I could teach a class nationally on it. And ask yourself where you are in all those scales. Instead of being impetuous and just opening, take the time to get as organized as you possibly can. Because once, and you know, John, mm-hmm. once you turn that key on day one and you step in, there is no going back.
Right.
To me, one of the biggest things about being a business owner and opening is I'd rather you take 2 extra months before you open if you're taking those 2 months to get the right systems in place and make sure you're organized and learning the things you need to learn than just right. opening and trying to figure that out on the fly. Because then you're going to teach yourself habits that are going to have you be working around the clock on Sundays, on Mondays, no balance. And you're going to be tied into something that is controlling you because of what you didn't learn before you opened.
This is going to resonate with a lot of people that are listening, whether they're 5 years into owning a salon
right.
and wishing they had spent that time, or they're doing that now, or they're maybe handing the keys back
mm-hmm.
Over, you know, and look, there's no shame in what I just said. Like that, you know, there, everybody has a different ride. We just had a great conversation with Gerard Scarpese, where he talked
yep.
about coming to the realization that he wasn't a salon owner, but he's built a huge brand in the hair industry called Hairbrained. And
yep.
he had another thing. You got me thinking about the yoga studio that I go to when I'm in the Atlanta area in Lawrenceville, because the people that own that school, their day job is attorney. And their fun job is that they own a yoga studio, and they were about to open a second prior to COVID, and they, you know, they waited on that, obviously, because, you know, of the type of business it is. But that said, we got to be pretty good friends. And Sherry had told me, I was asking her, how did you go from being a family attorney to opening a yoga studio, right? And she kind of started to walk me down her journey. And the first thing that her and her husband said was that they started to research owning a business. Stop right there.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what a hairstylist would not do.
Right.
You know, they put the time, and I thought, I went back to my hairdresser thinking, and I thought, what does that even mean? I'm going to research owning a business. And because what you just said, Steve, is that they're two different jobs. That hairstylist is an awesome job that I love, Salon owner is another job entirely. Right. And until you've had, and I've had the knock at the door from the IRS that you shared about, until you've had that knock at the door, it gets really real when there's an IRS agent sitting there with your accountant telling you that, you know, you owe them something that you had no idea. You don't even know why you owe them.
Correct.
You're trying to figure out what the hell they're talking about.
I can relate.
How do you identify now that you've walked into a salon, they're running, you realize I've got this owner behind the chair that just doesn't know what ownership looks like.
Sure.
What's that process look like? And what are some of the places that you commonly start?
First for me is before I even work with the business, I'm going to analyze it. I've got a 5-page questionnaire I have somebody fill out. They send me that plus their most recent profit and loss statement and sales numbers. I do financial analysis. I want to look at where the business is at. And I had to learn this through my own experience, you know, growing as a coach throughout all these years, because if a business is in a cash negative situation or they're just barely getting by, the owner is going to be worrying about money making and worrying about getting by. So I want to be able to see that I can help a business transform itself financially, and that even if the business is treading water, that the owner has some level of cash flow to fall back on, so that in the first 3 months while we're growing things, they can make the investment and not be in the back of their head worried about here's another bill I'm paying. Because when somebody comes into coaching worrying about paying that bill, they're in that lacking mentality. So yeah. For me, I want to analyze everything. I want to see what the cash flow is telling me, and I want to be responsible. Because if the cash is telling me that you need to work on certain things before I take you on, then I've got a 10-course webinar series that I created for people. I've got my books, which are all self-read and self-work. So then I have a more cost-effective way for somebody to get started. I'm also listening for, are they in the place of no return? Because there's people, and John, you know, from working with Neil back in the day, there's going to be people that are interested in coaching. It's sexy and romantic sounding, but as you know, us coaches, we're rigorous and we're going to hold people accountable, and this is how it's going to go. So in my process, I want to make sure people understand exactly what coaching is going to look like. So they, and I'm listening for how they're creating their world. Because if somebody is in that place of maybe I'm going to dip my toe in the water, I'm not going to work with them because we're not going to get far. And I don't have the time to be pushing a rock uphill on a snail's back, right? Right. So somebody's got to really be in that I'm ready to throw my head over the wall and go chase after it with you, Steve, mentality. So I look at the finances, I look at their thinking and how they're relating to things. If I've got somebody thinking the right way, and we can grow the business in a short period of time to help the cash flow, then we're going to jam. Now, once we start jamming, the first thing I'm doing is looking at where are we not organized financially. So behind the scenes, I can help the business reorganize their P&L and make sure cash flow is all separated out the way it needs to look. Mm-hmm. And then helping them focus on some marketing promotions to get a nice boost, because I want the coaching program paying for itself through sales growth within the first 3 months I work with anybody. I pride myself on that. Yeah. And while I'm doing that, I'm beginning to work on where are you, the owner, spending your time, and how are you thinking and relating to running your business? I'm looking for where I need to shift your thinking in certain areas. John, for example, might be really strong with his marketing, but when it comes to knowing the numbers and inventory, not his strong suit, doesn't like it, avoids it. So me understanding that, I'm then going to dig into those areas and go on the journey with him to start that. I'm not going to focus as much on the marketing because he's already got strong suit there. I'm going to know what he's doing and send me everything and let me see if I can add little ideas, but I'm not going to dig into that until down the road. Mm-hmm. I'm going to really isolate where the owner feels and where I'm hearing they need to improve. And I'm always within the first 90 days getting an owner to work one day less if they're working full time mm-hmm. in a treatment room or behind the chair.
Right. I want to ask a question. You just described the mindset of an owner in a way, and the owner that goes for coaching, usually. Now if they're smart, they go for coaching up front. They know that they're going to need to learn some things. They know it's good to have a hand-in-hand partner, somebody who has a vested interest in their growth as well. To the owner that's drowning, as I've felt before, as I know John has walked through an experience before where it's like, why isn't this thing growing? Is it turnaroundable?
What it looks like is, do they have enough? Are there enough income producers? Do we have an engine that we can prime? Because if it's just you and maybe you and John and that's it, and you're in dire financial straits, you know, it's going to be challenging, you know. But what's the engine look like? I don't live in the world of worrying about a bill to pay. That's secondary to how do we grow? How do we grow? How do we grow? How do we grow? So the first thing inside of my philosophy with a salon owner is let's look at the engine as it exists. And how can we prime it? Price increase, marking up retail inventory instead of marking it up 100, 110% on the top 33% of your movers. So that immediately creates cash flow. How can we do some jolts to things as we need to? Looking at your consultation system, looking at how you're retailing, why you do it that way. What's your thinking? What's your philosophy? How do we need to shift that? Those are the things that can help us generate and drive cash flow in a shorter period of time. The more long-term systematic stuff, teaching P&L and finance and getting in there and looking at operational systems and helping you create 12-month marketing plans and 12-month education plans, promoting people from within, all those things will come. But for me, the first 2 or 3 months are really just getting inside of your thinking and helping you shift it and then getting you actionable. My commitment after every call, I give people action steps with by when dates. You show up to a call and the work's not, and I put all those by when dates in my schedule. But if you miss a by when date, I know about it because I'm pinged. However, I'm not coming chasing after you because you said you want this. So as a coach, I'm then going to hold you accountable on the next call. And that accountability doesn't mean that and this is my philosophy. I will never, ever, ever be upset at anybody for doing or not doing work. I'm here to turn the mirror and have them look at themselves, because how they show up in the program is how they lead in the business. So if you're agreeing to something and then you don't do it and don't communicate, where else in your business and your life do you do that? And what's the impact? And are you willing to keep living with that? My philosophy is that if you're coming into coaching to do a bunch of things, we'll do a bunch of things. But I want you to have a transformative experience in yourself. I want you to learn and think differently. I want you to realize you can do more than you thought you were capable of. I want you to realize that you don't have to do it all and that you can teach other people and that there's people that didn't even realize that they had skills that we can tap into. And I want an owner to learn how to lead and ask questions and guide, and that as opposed to telling somebody to do something where there's no thought around it. It's just a soldier then acting upon an order. You know, so my whole philosophy hinges in that world. I want an owner to come out on the other side, not needing me anymore. If they want to, and then I've had clients that I've coached. I've got one I've been coaching for 15 years. I've got one that I've been coaching for 12 years, and the work I was done with one, I was done at 9 months. The other I was done at 18 months. And they're like, well, as long as I'm in business, I'm talking to you once a month because you know me, you know how I operate. You know my business and you hold me accountable, you know? So I've had relationships with them ever since, you know? But to me, coaching is finite. There should be a begin date and end date as to, you know, you getting to the place where you're well-rounded and you can now take it and really run with it.
The bulk of this conversation, we've kind of talked about finance, and you wrote a book called Financial Fitness.
Yes.
The second book you wrote is Interdependent Leadership.
Yes.
I think we're kind of talking about that now, so I want to kind of dig a little bit deeper, if that's okay. You create a culture of inclusive growth, as I think is your secondary title. So as we seem to be going down that road, talking about leadership and moving your team forward, where'd that come from? Why that?
Why is that? Is in my years of coaching, we can get the numbers organized. Mm-hmm. We can look at and learn what they're saying to us. But if you, the leader, don't know how to convey that information and facts to the team in a way that they get engaged and inspired by it, then you just know where the numbers are, but you're struggling to get everybody to coalesce like this.
Right.
But that's where this book came from. In my years of coaching, learning on my own path as a coach and maturing in my role as a coach, learning how to ask more questions and guide the owner to get to that breakthrough, and then teaching them how to do the same thing. Instead of us seeing that our inventory is at 63%, needs to be at 50% for ordering, instead of going and telling the team we got to get better at ordering, mm-hmm. you know, all right, let's frame this into questions we can ask to engage their thinking and find out where they're at. Because the more you become involved, the more you're going to more than likely follow through. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I put in my book that I teach, espouse, and believe in fervently is that when you're looking at guiding people, you have to look at it from three main areas. If I were to draw like a triangle, we've got values, mm-hmm. we've got thinking, and then we've got our behavior. So if you and I are aligned in the same value system, we believe the same thing fundamentally about cutting and coloring hair or providing facials and massage, if we believe in the same thing, if we have the same beliefs about how we want to serve people, if we have the same beliefs in product line, then more than likely, I'm not going to have a values-based disconnect. Mm-hmm. Then I only have to coach on, is your perception and thinking aligned with where I'm at? Are you seeing it the way I'm seeing it? Mm-hmm. And if not, I need to help you see it the way I'm seeing it. Once I know that you and I are aligned with values and we think and see things the same way, the only thing I have to coach you on is your behavior, your habits, your daily actions or inactions. So a lot of times, John, what I found is that we don't stop to get present to, am I dealing with a values-based disconnect? Are we having a disconnect in our thinking? Usually we just see the behavior and we immediately go to coach the behavior without trying to see where is that coming from first. So
in order to
the genesis of the book is how to guide and coach people in yep. that way, and then how to get them involved and help them grow as a leader. And then the last half of the book is about recruiting.
Before we get to recruiting, though, I want to ask you this question. How do I know, and maybe this is covered in recruiting, how do I know if someone is aligned with my values? And two, if they're not, is that a deal breaker? Or can I sway people to my side of the values equation?
I think the I'll answer the second one first.
Okay.
Typically, if we don't have the same values, I could love you and go out and have a beer with you, but I'm more than likely we just can't work with each other, because mm-hmm. then it's going to become a lack of respect issue at the end of the day. If you have very different belief systems, you know, than I do, as an owner, I have to respect that. You know,
give me an example of what that looks like for a salon owner.
Okay, I'm committed that everybody, no matter how long they work here, works at least every other Saturday, and you think because you've been here long enough that you don't have to. Mm-hmm. Or I have a belief system for how we're going to serve the guest and perform consultation. And you resist it, you don't do it, you don't like it, you want to do your own, you then become different from everybody else. So now I'm losing credibility if I allow you to continue to operate in that different value. And you know, so if I'm letting you do that, John, and then Chris is like, well, I don't have to listen to Steve, John's doing his own thing. So those are some good examples of where a values-based disconnect can come into play. You know, for example, I had an owner that we recently severed ties in our work together because she just was not committed to retailing to people anymore. Mm-hmm. And I said, I got it, I appreciate that. But it's, you know, so we see running business differently, you know, and I'm not here to have you invest your money for me to to push you uphill with something that you are diametrically opposed to doing. I think owners a lot of times are unwilling to take that step. Chris is bringing in $1,500 a week, but we have a disconnect in values, you know, but I'm going to stand for the $1,500 versus the values. Then I'm selling my soul and my culture down the river because of what somebody is producing. And we get locked into that when we fail to remember, oh, I built him to that point, so I can build somebody else to that point too.
As a salon owner, I think we sometimes, oftentimes struggle between the difference between values and I just want it this way because it's my shop and this is the way I want it, right? And I think that in this world that we live in currently, there are, you know, there are some styles who are like, I don't like working for John anymore because he keeps telling me I have to, what clothes I have to wear and sure. I have to do my hair and I have to do my makeup and he's micromanaging me, right? So I think many salon owners and stylists as well struggle with the different, how do I differentiate between what's a value for my company, what's truly important, what I'm going to fall on the sword for, and what's just, I just want it that way because I want it that way.
Sure. Well, you know, a value is a deeply held driving force in life. It's something that's non-negotiable. We draw a line in the sand and say, this is who we are. This is how we're going to operate. Can't live without this. Personally, and if I'm going to be the owner, this is what I want in my culture. I actually think that they kind of dovetail together, sure. You know, because, you know, if I'm the one that's taking all of the risk and I'm blazing a trail and I'm creating an environment, you know, I am the impetus and catalyst for how that environment is going to look. Therefore, I'm going to attract those people. So if we get back to the recruiting, this is where it dovetails to recruiting. If I'm not super clear about what my values are, if I'm recruiting Chris and all I'm doing is showing him an aesthetically pretty place and these are our products and these are the hours and all those things, and he's looking for a place to land and he wants to make money, you know, that's all fine and dandy. But we haven't had the real conversations around who, you know, how, what's your philosophy about this industry? What are your belief systems? Yeah, you know, and creating questions around those things.
It's,
you know, that is a significant missing that I find in the recruiting process. We're not taking enough time to get to know the thinking and belief system of that person. We're just excited I got a warm body in the chair to interview, you right. know?
It's funny. I've been talking to a young guy who, he and his wife, she's a colorist, he's a cutter. They work at two different salons. They're going to open a salon. And they have talked about this for a while and this and that. And he is going to borrow some money from a family member, which I've warned him against. And he started to ask me about recruiting. And I said, well, what size salon are you guys opening? Like, what's this like? And he said, you know, like 6 chairs. And, you know, I said, well, your wife's a busy colorist, right? You guys, they don't have a clientele in the city that they're going to be working in. But they've lived there. So, you know, it couldn't take too long, right? They're established hairstyles. But however, he's, you know, what if I just get somebody in that's busy because blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, you're going to put 5 different personalities with 5 different work habits with 5, you know, without into a small space and expect that they're going to want to do your vision. Like, you got to start up front with, this is what we stand for. You're only looking for 6,
right?
He's on, this gentleman is only looking for 5 people. Yeah. That's not a million people, right? You could say no to 25 people that walk through your door, even if they like your decor, because they don't fit. And then that one person walks through, you start to talk about your philosophies, your vision, where you're headed. And they go, that's it. And that's why salons call each other families, because they think alike,
right?
And they have, they're heading in the same direction. And, you know, John spends a ton of time on values. I mean, it's one of my, you know, favorite topics to think about, you know, as far as that alignment. And you're so very right that you can feel it when there's a values disalignment, and you pointed it out beautifully. It's when you start to see that disrespect between people. Suddenly and it could be your top stylist, it could be your newest stylist. Suddenly they're not going to do the thing that they agreed to do up front because that was your culture. And by the way, I'm not even worried about the consequence because I don't give a shit, frankly.
Right.
And, you know, and that's how you tell a values thing. And it might be, John says this a lot. So John, I'm going to give you some thunder for a second here. He always says, you know, with the handbook, I wish our handbook could have six words and it's our six values. And if you're doing the thing that leads you in the direction of that value, whether it's family or teamwork or innovation, you know, then if you're innovating, if you're at, you know, if you're doing that thing, then yes, do it. If you're doing something that leads you away from that, then it doesn't work here. And so many people get hostage to that $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 a week hairstylist. And then their hands are tied. And you know how that ends up, Stephen? Terrible. Lockouts.
Somebody once said, what's worse, having them quit or having them quit and leave or having them quit and stay?
Yeah. And, you know, here's another interesting thing. In my book, I take people through an exercise and I have a sheet that they can download that comes with the book. And it's a values grid. And I want people to pick 20 that just come to their heart. And then I want them to whittle down from 20 to 10 and then from 10 to 5. Very hard exercise because all the 20 are things that I believe in and value: integrity, honesty, communication, teamwork, creativity, security, whatever they are, right?
Yep.
But then once they get their five, like these are my non-negotiable, then it's critical to define them, not in Webster's terminology, but in your own. Like write out your own definition of what is this value mean in your life, and then what are 1 to 3 actions that you take daily, weekly, monthly that have this value show up? Because then it's not just this Pollyannic idea or concept, it's a reality. It's like, okay, I value communication and I define it as doing what I, you know, having honest conversations and speaking the truth. So one action that I'll take is cleaning up an upset within 24 hours. That's an action that has me live into how I define what communication means to me. So a lot of times people come up with values, but I think we don't dive deep enough and make it real and actionable. So when we're hiring somebody, we need to take them through that exercise and find out what are their core values and what are their belief systems about it and what are things they do. And if they have a hard time coming up with something that they're that to do, that means it's more of an idea for them. It's not a real value. It's an ideology. And there's a distinct and subtle difference between both.
It was funny. We had a great podcast conversation with Gina Bianca a little while back. And what I loved about her conversation, well, our conversation with her, is that she realized that the values that she had were not serving her well. They were taking her down a path that was not healthy, that was not productive. And she went through a transformational process to actually redefine and choose her words, choose values that actually would take her where she wanted to go. And I thought that that was the first word that pops to my head is brave. But I think it's more than that. I mean, there's bravery, there's courage, there's a whole lot there that it's one thing to align yourself with your values with people around you so you're supported in those values. I think it's another thing to say, you know what, the values I have aren't working for me. I need to change how I think. I need to choose values that add to a life that I want to have, because pointedly, the values I have right now aren't doing that for me.
Amen to that. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we've all been evolving in our lives, you know, and we're in different phases in our lives. So it's critical to constantly reevaluate these things. Now is a great time of year to be doing that because all of us are in a fresh start, you know, let's reflect, how can we grow mode. So now is a great time of year for that. I will add this: when you're thinking about recruiting and you're thinking about salons, all of this is important. And if I find the right-minded and right-hearted person, you know, that's the key thing, right-hearted and right-minded. But the other missing for salons that I see, Chris and John, is this. I might find you, Chris, to be the right person, but now I'm bringing you into a culture that you're excited to be a part of, but I have not prepared you for, meaning I don't have a 90-day orientation process and calendar written out, a schedule for you. I don't have a marketing plan written out. I don't have an ongoing training plan for the whole staff created and written out. I don't have any of those things systematic. And if I don't have any of those things in place, then the interview process, I sold you pie in the sky, Pollyannic, you know, apple pies, blue skies is going to be great here. When in fact, all you're going to see then is my ass behind the chair, you know, 10 hours a day with barely any accessibility for you. So I think one of the big missings before, whenever I'm out on the road teaching recruiting, you know, I'll ask an audience, all right, how many of you need to hire somebody? And they'll raise their hand. I'll say, great. Well, after this class, you're going to walk out realizing you're not ready to hire any of them if you're missing what I'm about to introduce you to.
Right.
You know, which is handbooks, policies, procedures, scripts, training, an organized day-by-day training plan, an education plan for the whole business, marketing to help grow you once you come in. So without those things being organized and in play, that significantly leads to why good quality candidates come in and go out faster. Like, man, it started off so great with Chris. Well, it flamed out, you know, and usually owners aren't looking at themselves. They're looking at it was Chris wasn't happy and it Chris became agitated. Chris is now a little bit more standoffish. So why is Chris being that way? Well, more than likely, he's reacting to who I'm being or not being, what I'm doing or not doing as a leader.
Yeah, you sold me a vision of a value set, but there wasn't a follow through on it. There was no, when I got there, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to be a part of the deal. So you threw me into it. I stood around and folded some towels and swept the floor, but I didn't know how to get in. How long is this going to take? What are the steps I'm going to go through in training? When am I going to know if I get to take a chair on or not? Not just because you like me, but because I understand how I'm going to continue to grow.
Amen. You know, I've got a grid that a 90-day grid, and I have owners when I start coaching them, I have them work on the first 15 days, and then they do the next 15 days after we've nailed the first 15. But literally, it's a color-coded schedule. 9 a.m. clock in, 9:05 meet with team lead, you know, 9:15, you know, shadow and assist until 11:15. 11:15, take a break or lunch or whatever. There's training time. There's testing time. You know, it's all color-coded, all organized. And then an owner has to take that template and build their training program for new hires around that. To me, it's such a big missing in our industry. We're just not spending the time to be organized enough to take that precious talent that we fought to get into our business and ensure that we're set up for them. And also what this does, when we have a plan like this, is it weeds out those people that sold me a bill of goods in that interview process, because people are really good at selling themselves. And then they bring their shitty behaviors in, you know, and now I'm here with this person. Somebody who's a prima donna is going to run away from all that level of organization. Somebody who said, I'm a self-starter, I'm motivated, just point me in the right direction. Okay. Here's your first 90 days. Here's the schedule. Here's where you're supposed to be day one, hour one. So I don't expect to see you standing around. You're going to have, there is somewhere for you to be at every point. So then if you're that self-starter, you're going to shine in that and you're going to move quickly. And that's going to be my signal that I actually did hire somebody who has the same values and is a self-starter. Because man, we've all been in interviews. Anybody can say that stuff to get a job. I think the key thing for an owner is to redirect their emotion of actually having somebody that they like that they're interviewing and redirect it into, just because I like Chris doesn't mean anything. I'll know if Chris is going to stick 90 days from now. If I want to give him a chance, Chris is going to know, Chris, you got the first 90 days. You got to earn it here, buddy. Mm-hmm. We're organized for you. We're ready for you. We're going to meet with you on an ongoing basis. We're going to ask your feedback as to how we can get better. But the first 90 days are going to tell us if you're going to last long term here. And that's a big missing in the recruiting process, that owners aren't thinking that way. They're just happy to have gotten Chris.
Yep.
And then they just go about their business, as opposed to having Chris jump through every hoop possible to keep the job that he just got. Mm-hmm. And I think when we do that in the first 90 days, we will level the playing field. And hell, you might you might get one out of 30 that stick that way. I'd rather go through the 30 to find that diamond in the rough who's going to be with me for years than go through a bunch and just have a revolving door going on, because I'm not rigorous to my standards.
You said the word earlier, and the word was hustle. And here's the deal. You know, I've been a really busy hairstylist. I know John's been a really busy hairstylist. We work with some tremendously busy hairstylists and incredible people. The ones that do it, hustle for it. The ones that don't. And it's, and if they're not going to do that, unfortunately, you could kind of guess their fate. They're going to grow to a medium amount if I feed them enough. They're going to retain an average amount of people. They're going to, and for a long time, and I look, I don't say this with a smile on my face because I love hairstylists. I mean, these are, that's my people. But for a long time, they'll ask themselves the question, either publicly or privately, what am I doing wrong? And it's like, you know what you're doing wrong? You didn't work for it. You didn't, like, you didn't really work for it. And by work, it's called work.
Right.
It's hard. Sometimes it's really hard.
Amen.
And so that's, and if you're a hairstylist and you're listening to this and you're going, oh, that sounds an awful lot like me. Look, you know, when Steven says things like look in the mirror and things like that, that's a good thing. It's a good thing to be able to look across the mirror and go, you know who's responsible for this? I am. Because you know who has total control of your beliefs, outlooks, attitudes, and actions? You do.
Amen to that.
If it were up to Steven or if it were up to John to make me successful, God bless him. You know, like it's not gonna work, but it's up to me. And as a hairstylist, it's mostly up to you. If you hustle for it, you can have, I mean, you mentioned Gina Bianca a minute ago. Come on. Here's a stylist who works for it, you know? And so if you look at somebody like her on social media and you go, I want to be like that. Well, don't follow her on Instagram. Or if you do, do the thing she's doing. She's out there teaching people. She's out there causing the thing to happen. And that's the power of a hairstylist. Look, an amazing hairstylist in any community is an addition to that community. Yes. They have a positive effect on that, you know, on that community. People love you. You know, they want you at their party. You get invited to their wedding, but you got to hustle for it. It's such a beautiful low-hanging fruit, and all you got to do is put in the work.
You know, I guess I'll wrap up by saying two things to that. One is your context is spot on. We are leaders, whether we own the salon or not, or whether we're a stylist. We're leaders in our community. You know, Chris, if you're seeing 20 people a week, you're 80 people a month, trust you with how they look and feel. You're a leader. Remember that, own it, act like that. Own your power, own your shit. And I think the other thing is, for any salon owners and managers out there that are listening to this, your commitment, and I'm choosing my words consciously, everyone, not your job, your commitment must be to create a pathway for people to grow. You are responsible to create that. They are accountable to follow it. They eventually have to do that. And a lot of times we try to do more than the person is committed to doing themselves. So you have to notice when that's occurring, and you have to check yourself as a leader and say, okay, where do I need to shift so that I'm setting up the environment and the other person's going and doing the work they need to do. Less handholding and more nudging and pushing. You know, foot on the ass more than, you know, there's so many owners that are sympathetic versus empathetic. Empathetic, I put my arm around you, it's going to be okay, you figure it out, you'll get better, growing color, I got it, blah, blah, blah. Empathetic is, it's okay, you're going to figure it out. Now, what are you going to do tomorrow? Foot on the ass, what are we up to? You know, so I think we must become more empathic in how we lead. And in this day and age we're in, We are just in uncharted waters we've never navigated through. And I've seen so many businesses reopen their doors and go back to business the way they thought and acted before. And to me, they're doing that at their peril. We must realize that we're in different times. We must think differently. We must walk into the business every day and say, what do I not know? What am I not aware of? What do I not understand? You know, this is completely different than it's ever been before. So what do I need to learn? As opposed to, I'm going to think the same way, act the same way, and do the same things, even though we're in a completely different climate than we've been, and we're probably going to be for most of this year. You know, so I think I had to squeeze that message in here at the end to make sure that anybody listening gets that. Please, in a humble way, look at what you don't know and act and look at your business and say, what are the hidden trends that are going on right now? One that I uncovered, and, you know, I actively coach around 20 salons and spas a month right now. And one that I uncovered since we've reopened is that nobody's looking at their new client volume. And they're not tracking it, they're not looking at it, and they're not focused on it. And every single business I coach have been getting a significant amount of new clients.
Right.
And because they're not looking at it, their rebooking percentages are woeful and low. So to me, getting any new client, COVID or no COVID, is gold in your hands. But in this climate, they're diamonds in your hands. Mm-hmm. So we must look at our new client, how many new clients we're getting. What are they spending in service? What are they spending in retail? How many of them are rebooking? How many of them make it to visit two and visit three? Got to track all of that. And when you start looking at that and you look at it as a whole business and by individual producers, you're then going to see where your strengths and where your opportunities are. Then you can break it into two things. What are we doing with that brand new person when we got them in the building? And let's look at what we're doing now and what can we add? Get everybody in the team involved in that conversation. And then secondarily, what are we doing once they leave? Keep us in their brains. So I think every owner out there, if you start, go back to September of this year and track all your new client data now and have that be a conversation for this month of January. And make sure that
you're asking them to track for clarity. You're saying, track how many new clients, whether they were referral, where there are some all new clients, and now have they been back?
Yeah. What are we doing with them when we have them?
Yeah.
All right. So for example, I was on a call this morning. We were looking at 9 new clients in 1 week. 4 the owner took, 5 her stylist that she's building took. No one rebooked and no retail sold with those 5 new customers for her. So I told her, I was like, if I'm you, you have to make it meritorious. If she's not going to do what she needs to do to rebook a guest or to retail to them, which she should be doing, then she shouldn't be getting any of those clients. So make it meritorious. You know, we have to do that. I shouldn't just feed you clients, Chris, because you've been here the longest if you're not doing the work.
If I'm not knowing that your part of the deal is you gave me that guest. My part of the deal is I have to turn them into a long-term guest.
Serve them. Yes. Yep. You know, and it's gold in our hands because what we're seeing, and I'm sure you guys are seeing this, is most 9 out of 10 salons I'm coaching have a lower client volume than last year. And I'm not just talking about year to year. I'm talking about once we reopened, where are we at versus where we were last year, right?
We weren't able to get
as many less. People. Yeah. We're doing less.
Yeah.
And we're doing less, but we're getting new clients and still doing less. Mm. So what does that mean about all the other people that just chose to not come back? Right. So if we're not taking the new guests and really isolating what we're doing with them and how are we wowing the heck out of them through service? And then what are the things we're leaving them with when they walk out the door? Those little touches, like a new client gift bag, for example, with all kinds of nice little bells and whistles in it. Following up, to check in on them. If we're not doing those things, then we're missing significant future cash flow in a very unstable and uncertain marketplace.
Steve, that was just incredible. Hey, listen, if I'm an owner and I'm listening to you, or I'm a stylist, I want to hear more, learn more. How do we find you? What's your website or
My website is www.stephengomez.net. That's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, like my mama spelled it. Gomez, G-O-M-E-Z.net. So stephengomez.net. Facebook, I'm Stephen J. Gomez, again with the P-H. On Instagram, I am Salon Coach S-J-G, my initials. Salon Coach S-J-G. Anybody listening to this, if you have any questions for me, if you need anything, please reach out to me. My email is info@stephengomez.net. I'd be more than happy to answer questions and provide whatever support that you need. If you feel that you resonate with my message and you want to find out more about my services, books, products, and stuff like that, hit me up. I'm here. Hopefully this was valuable for you. And I certainly wish every listener not only the very best, but the mindful best. Take the time to look at where you're spending your time and how you're relating to it, and notice where you need to shift so that you're not only giving your best effort, it's the best mindful effort that you can give. And we wish you the very best. And I'm honored and thankful that you guys had me today. This was fun, and I hope to be back with you. And
every time we have one of these conversations, I walk away with a little bit more than I knew before I came in, and I love that about these podcasts.
Yeah, it's amazing. We also walk away with a lot of gratitude to our listeners. You know, we're watching those listens go up. We hate to ask, but we know there's a few things we need to ask for.
I don't hate asking. Not even a little bit. Hey, for those of you who haven't heard me ask before, 5-star reviews. You got the phone in your hand. It's down by your lap. I don't care where it is, but it's not that far away from you. 5-star reviews. You know you want to do it. You know you love this podcast. Share it with the world, because every time you create a 5-star review, an angel gets his wings. Did you know that?
Yeah. And while that angel is getting his wings, it helps us move up. You know, it helps us get more noticed in the podcast world, helps share the message. And if you're really being served by this, which we hope you are, you know, we'd love for you to share that with some other salon owners. The other thing we're going to ask you to do is to follow us on Instagram at 124.go, as well as Facebook. We're going to get more active on our Facebook page. And so if you're a Facebooker, then follow us on Facebook at 124.go. And if you're a Grammar, please tag us in your stories, and we'll do the same in hours. So thanks again for listening, everybody. We will see you on the next episode. Bye. Hey, podcast. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Throwback Thursday with Stephen Gomez. Absolutely love those 5-star reviews. Keep them coming. Thank you so much. And don't forget to download your free copy of Shop Talk. I'm taking that down in a couple of weeks. And it's 124goacademy.com. 124goacademy.com. Go there now and download your free episode of Shop Talk. Thanks again for listening. See you soon.